Here's the editor of Lenswork Publishing, Brooks Jensen.
I'd like to begin today's podcast by asking a simple question. When you want to make a photograph, what do you do? My suspicion is that you probably set out into the world somewhere and start looking for things that you might photograph. That probably pertains more to landscape photography than it does to other kinds of photography, but in general, I think that's pretty much what we do, hence the whole idea that photographing at home is difficult, so therefore we go out into the world to look where there are exciting things, exciting people, exciting landscapes, exciting activities that we can photograph. For the purposes of a sort of shorthand, let's say that you're on the hunt for potential. You never know when you click the shutter if you're going to end up with a terrific image or not. Particularly these days in digital photography, we do an awful lot of capturing of images, and we hope with every single capture that they're going to be able to be developed into a decent photograph, something that we would be happy to hang on the wall or show to other people. But we don't know. So what we're looking for is potential captures that might create an interesting photograph. I've referred to this in the past as gathering assets, things you might someday be able to do something with, but that's yet to be proven. Nonetheless, we fire away, we have fun, we enjoy the world, we do lots and lots of gathering, and when we get home, at least a lot of us, we'll upload them to our computer and organize them, probably using Lightroom or some similar software like Lightroom that's essentially a giant database management for images. So now you've got a bunch, maybe 10,000, maybe 100,000, maybe more images in your Lightroom catalog. Here's a little thought experiment I would like to challenge you with. When you want to make a photograph, instead of going out into the world and looking for something you might photograph, what if you took that exact same attitude of exploration, searching for potential, but you applied it, instead of to the world, to your Lightroom catalog? What if you were to point yourself to your Lightroom catalog and look the same way you look out in the world for things that catch your eye, for things that you think you might be able to do something with? So that instead of looking randomly at the entire world that you encounter in your travels and your search, what if you applied that exact same mindset to the images in your Lightroom catalog, knowing that somewhere in there, just as in somewhere out there in the world, there is something interesting that has the potential to be made into a piece of artwork, whether that's a project or a single image? For this discussion, doesn't make any difference, and I could talk about either one of them in this context with equal dedication, but let's zero in on the single image just for fun, because it'll simplify my point a little bit. So you point yourself at your Lightroom catalog looking for individual images that you might be able to do something with. Does it make sense to you that this would be kind of like a second level edit? The first level edit you did out in the world when you were wandering, looking at everything the world has to offer to us, and you found certain things, click, click, click. But in doing so, you excluded all the things that you didn't photograph. So all the images that end up in your Lightroom catalog are ones that have already been selected out of all of the possible images that the world presented to you. So you're doing sort of a second edit now. You're restricted in the Lightroom catalog edit to just those images that you've clicked the shutter on, just the ones that you captured because you were on the hunt for potential. I would propose that searching the world and searching in your exigent collection are pretty much the same thing. What you're looking to do is find the spark between what you're observing, whether it's in the world or in your Lightroom catalog, and your current, in the moment, creative self. You're looking for something that says, aha, look, I could do something with this. The difference is, of course, that when you're out in the world, all you can do is click the shutter, capture, and then postpone the rest of the process until you get back, upload the images, look at them in your computer, or if you're using analog materials, develop the negatives, make contact sheets, and start thinking about making an enlargement. But the difference is that when you're in the darkroom or you're in Lightroom and you're starting to actually do something with those captures of potential, that you can actually move to the next step, which is starting to execute your creative vision. And that is a gigantic advantage to considering your Lightroom catalog as the field of potential rather than the world as the field of potential, for the obvious reason that when you're looking at the world, you can't process anything. You can't finish anything. You're just gathering assets. And even if you're doing pre-visualization and you're trying to make JPEGs in the camera, you won't really know if you've succeeded or not until you get it back and load it up in the computer and make whatever final tweaks might be necessary, if any at all. Only then will you know that you have a completed piece of work. But my proposal is that's exactly the same thing that happens if you look at your Lightroom catalog as the field of exploration rather than the world as the field of exploration. Because when you find an image in your Lightroom catalog, you still don't know if it's going to finish, if it's going to be processed, if you can process it into a finished image you can be proud of. Here's another way to look at this idea. Instead of looking at the world as the field of potential or your own Lightroom catalog as the field of potential, what would it be like if you were to have access to someone else's Lightroom catalog and you were able to look at all of their images as the field of potential? Wouldn't it make sense that you would do essentially the same thing that you do out in the world? You would look at all of these things, reject a whole bunch of them because they don't connect with you at all, but some of them you would go, oh, that's got potential, and you'd flag that one, you'd pick that one, you'd put it in a collection or something, because you would say, that's one I want to go back and work with later. Someone else's Lightroom catalog becomes the field of potential. Looking at your Lightroom catalog, or I suppose theoretically someone else's Lightroom catalog, looking at your Lightroom catalog is the field of potential, but more efficient, because you've already done the first cut when you were out in the world, and all the things you decided not to photograph, the vast majority of the world, have already been set aside and rejected. So what you're doing when you work your Lightroom catalog in this regard is you're really zeroing in on not the ones you think might have potential, but the ones you're really starting to think actually do have potential. It's applying a third cut. The first field of potential was the world. The second field of potential is the Lightroom catalog. The third field of potential are those images that you pull out of the Lightroom catalog and say, I think I can really do something with this. This is why I've said for years that if I could never go out in the world with my camera, if I could never click another shutter, if I could never capture another digital image, I could still have a productive art life for the rest of my life by just working the images that are in my Lightroom catalog. The term I like to use is mining. I can go mining in my Lightroom catalog for things that maybe I don't even know are there. In that regard, mining's a pretty good word. That's what you're doing out there in the world when you're a miner, is you're digging up a whole bunch of dirt in order to find a little nugget of gold. Well, isn't that essentially what we're doing with the Lightroom catalog? So what are the little nuggets of gold that we look at? I would suggest that there are four kinds of things that you're looking for when you're mining your Lightroom catalog looking for photographs. Those four things are, first, the odd ducks. And by these images, I mean the ones that don't fit what you normally do. A subset of that are the images that you have no recollection of making whatsoever. Those odd ducks, to me, are very important images because these are the ones that bubble up from your subconscious. You didn't set out to make them. You may not even be able to remember making them. But for some reason, you did. For some reason, at the moment, part of you thought, this could be really interesting. And so you click the shutter. It's got potential. But why did you select it to have potential? It's because somehow it connected with you, very likely on a subconscious level. And therefore, it doesn't look like all the images that you made consciously, that you set out to make, that you typically make. It's an odd duck. Pay attention to those, because they're often the source of real deep inspiration. And they can often be processed into some really interesting images that maybe bring you in touch with a deeper self that you weren't even aware existed. So that's odd ducks. Ones that don't look like anything you normally do, and ones that you can't remember photographing at all. The second category of images to pay attention to when you're looking for photographs in your Lightroom catalog are the ones that you can't process successfully with your normal kind of processing. Now, here's what I mean by that. The vast majority of images that I bring into my Lightroom catalog, I do a fairly predictable number of things to them to try to make them look good. Not great, just good. I sharpen them. I denoise them if I need to. I crop them so that horizontal lines, the horizon is level with the edge of the frame. I adjust the color balance. I may do a little dodging, a little burning to make them sort of look right. But I didn't have to stretch very far to do that. I do that on almost every image. Every image in the digital world needs to be sharpened. Every image needs to be considered whether or not it needs noise reduction. So that combination of things pretty much get done with every single image I capture. The ones I'm suggesting that you look for when you're mining your Lightroom catalog are the ones where you have to stretch farther than that, when it requires more processing, when you have to think a little more creatively, when there's potential in the image that's beyond just making it look right, when maybe it has metaphorical capabilities, or it's an image that can fit in with a group of other images into a project. You have to stretch beyond sort of just, I saw this, isn't it nice? And that leads us to the third category of images to look for when you're mining your Lightroom catalog for photographs, and that is the ones that have the potential for extreme processing. And that, at least in my world, ends up being a much bigger collection of images than I would have ever guessed in either my analog days or the early days of digital processing. I think I'm not alone when I say that I've learned digital processing allows us to push pixels around far more than I originally thought. Mainly because coming from the analog darkroom, you couldn't really push, well, there weren't pixels, but you could change the contrast, you could crop, you could dodge and burn a little bit, but there were limits to what you could accomplish in the analog darkroom that were pretty severe, where in the digital workflow, there are practically no limits. You can do anything with color. You can do anything with tones, with shapes, with transitions, with gradations, with recombinant images. It is a wide open field, and as a result of that, extreme processing is much more attractive now than ever before. I have images that have started out as fairly high-key images that are pretty soft in terms of contrast. They don't have black blacks. They've kind of got grays and whites that preserve detail but are white. And by the time I'm done processing them, they are dark, moody, high-contrast, sparkling images. And that's because I can push the pixels around to such extreme degrees that I would never, in my wildest imagination, be able to pre-visualize a dark, moody, contrasty image when I'm looking at a light, high-tone, high-key, soft image. But I can now in digital processing. Extreme processing opens up the possibility for all kinds of things, including, by the way, an interesting challenge. I'll make this as a blanket statement, but I don't really believe it, so keep that in mind. But the blanket statement is, I think you could take any image out of your Lightroom catalog and turn it into an interesting photograph, maybe a very abstract one, maybe not even close to being recognizable compared to what it originally started as, but you could take any image and turn it into something interesting. If you think I'm wrong about that, try it. Just grab any image at random from your Lightroom catalog and allow yourself extreme processing. Eventually, my proposal is you would find something that you'd go, that's pretty nice. Pretty cool. Maybe even, you know, worth printing and matting and framing and hanging on the wall. Extreme processing opens up the possibility of making stunning images out of kind of mundane images. Which always reminds me of that great Ted Orland quote, if you can't make a stunning image of a mundane subject, at least make a mundane image of a stunning subject. And now I guess there's kind of a corollary to Orland's wisdom, which is no matter how mundane the image you start with, you can probably process it into something that's interesting, although it may require extreme processing. The challenge is, can you find the interesting image that's buried inside that mundane exposure? And now that brings us to the fourth idea in this looking for photographs in our Lightroom catalog. Here's what is a fairly typical approach by most photographers that I know, including me. I think it's something that we learned way back when. It's just part of the process. And that is, you find something interesting to photograph out there in the world. You photograph the hell out of it. You make lots and lots of pictures. In the film days, that meant I might make 4 or 5 exposures onto different sheets of film and maybe even process them differently. But now, in the digital workflow, when I find something interesting to photograph or a place that's interesting to photograph, I might make several hundred exposures. Again, the hunt for potential. Okay, now I get back. I look at all those images in Lightroom. And what do we do? Well, according to Lightroom, according to Adobe, one of the things we are supposed to do is look at all those images and pass judgment on them. I've never been quite sure what we're supposed to pass judgment on, if it's the image as it looks, or the image as it has potential, or are we already passing judgment even though we haven't done any processing on what it'll look like when it's finished? I don't know. But they've given us the star rating system, and that's what it's supposed to be. The great images are going to be 5-star, and then the not so great images are going to be 4-star, and then 3-star, 2-star. By the time you get to 1-star, these are probably images you're never going to use. That's built into the software. That's the mindset that most people have when they first look at their images, is what is the rating for this image? Well, if you do that, and I think most of us do, even if we don't use the star system, we're probably still looking at images and saying, yeah, this one looks good, this one's not so good, etc. Which are the ones we're going to dive into and process and try to finish? we're not likely to start with the 1 stars and the 2 stars or even the 3 stars. We're going to jump right to the 5-star images and try to process those, because those are the ones we're most excited about. Those are the ones we think have the most potential. So we transfer them over to the develop module and we start playing around with developing. And if we're lucky, the first image we do, which is the very best one, it's the best of the 5 stars, so that's what we put our time and attention on. If we're really lucky, that ends up being a spectacular image, and we print it and mat it and frame it and hang it on the wall. Sometimes, however, in the processing of that very best 5-star image, we find something we don't like. There's a flaw, and so we move on to the next best 5-star image. And that one gets processed and matted and framed and hung on the wall. And if we can't do that with that, then we go to the next best 5-star. It's a hierarchy. We've ranked all of our work, and we work our way down, if we need to, beyond that best 5-star until we find an image that's the winner of the session. And that's the one that is the keeper. Here's the question. What happens to all the other images? If you've made 100 exposures of a given, you're at a lake or a river or something, and you made 100 exposures, and you use one of them, the very best one, to mat and frame and hang on the wall, what happens to all the others? For most of us, they just get forgotten. We don't want to use any of them because we've already chosen the best one. Why would we be satisfied with any of the others if we've already selected the very, very best one and finished it? The rest of them become detritus on our hard drives. Or do they? Or is there potential in all of those secondary images, the ones that aren't the best of the 5 stars? What about the rest of the 5 stars, or the 4 stars, or the 3 stars? Is it possible that there might be images there that we could do something with? The most obvious thing is select a few of them and develop a small project. If you photographed a river and you've got 100 images of it, certainly you can put 6 of them together for a seeing in sixes kind of project. Or 10 of them together for a folio project, or 3 of them together for a trilogies project. You don't have to stop at one as the best that goes matted and framed and hung on the wall. All of those secondary images are not secondary images. They're just ones you haven't used yet because you haven't found a way to use them. My proposal is that you can mine from those images all kinds of stuff. Most obviously things like diptychs and triptychs and seeing in sixes project and etc. But you could also find a collection of images that you could turn into a jigsaw image, or maybe a sequence that takes some aspect of the photograph through time, particularly if you're photographing something like a river. Maybe there's ways you can use parts of those images in other projects. I've been doing a series of small bookmark-like things from Japan called tanzaku that are a 3-to-1 vertical aspect ratio. In those secondary images, I'm finding lots of potential for that kind of presentation. Some images that are in those secondary images can be turned into backgrounds for other kinds of layouts, maybe ghosted to a very light gray so they become like paper texture. There's so many things we can do with those secondary images that don't involve matting and framing and hanging them on the wall, because we've already done that with the best of the 5-star images. All these other images might be able to have something done with them. What if you kick some of those over into the extreme processing category? You might be able to make an image that is considerably different from the 5-star image that's hanging above the fireplace by doing extreme processing that takes that place, that scene, that entire photographic session into a whole new realm of possibility. We all love it when we photograph a greatest hit, That's fantastic. That's one of the great reasons to be involved in photography. But it does seem a shame that all those images that led up to the greatest hit are abandoned as being absolutely useless, when they may not be. The bottom line of this whole discussion is this. Instead of going out into the world searching for photographs, there may be another approach you could take that might be just as productive. Different, but just as productive, and that is looking for photographs in your Lightroom catalog. Looking in particular for odd ducks that are images that don't fit what you normally do or that you don't remember photographing. Images that you have to really go beyond your normal processing to make them something interesting. And sometimes extreme processing to make them something interesting. And then, of course, there are all those secondary images that aren't the greatest hits, but still might be interesting photographs. Take the exact same mindset that you carry with you into the field to do photography out in the world. Just use that exact same mindset when you're looking at your Lightroom catalog. My contention is you will find so much potential in your Lightroom catalog that you'll be amazed, particularly if you're willing to go to things like extreme processing or groups of photographs, very productive ways to use your Lightroom catalog, and ways that until our generation were simply not accessible to previous generations. So aren't we lucky that we have such marvelous tools and fields of operation, if I can use that term, to apply our creativity to? Isn't it interesting that this idea shifts from applying our creative mind to the world to applying our creative mind to the world we've already captured, which is a fascinating way to explore ourselves, to learn about what we see, why we see, how we see, and that in itself opens doors in the creative life.
Copyright 2024, Lenswork Publishing.